Hello, and welcome to ngbuild-pod, where we share with you our knowledge of Angular, all the mistakes we've made, and some of the things we've gotten right. I'm Chris Kamak, and with me, as always, is the fantastic John Graham. We are both full of Stack Angular developers that love to share and be part of the developer community, and we both work here at Miles Technologies in Lumberton, New Jersey, but remotely. And we have spent the last several years building out our Angular template for the Miles Software Division. So, John, why don't you start off by telling us what you've been up to the past couple weeks?
Yeah, so you and I have gotten back into playing some video games recently. Ooh,
that's true.
So Chris and I are playing Smite. It's a game that I was semi-pro in a few years ago, semi-pro, as I like to claim. But I've really been enjoying that. So that's been something I've been doing for leisure time. Also reading Ready Player 2. Which is, you know, the sequel to Ready Player One, the book, the movie. I wasn't a huge fan of the movie, but I did really enjoy the book. Also working on my Azure developer certification. So I've been pretty busy, actually. Like, I have found my nights have not been boring.
Yeah, I guess so. Sure. You're also, aren't you running a class now, too?
Yeah, we have the, basically, like, Essential Web Developer Bootcamp going on at Miles, which is a free class we run to really just introduce people that have a little to zero web development experience to, you know, some of the technologies like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So, that's been taken up at least one day a week as well. So, it's been busy. Like I said, I've been keeping really busy, which I'm enjoying. I go to bed tired at night, is all, I guess.
Certainly sounds like you have a lot going on.
Yeah, it's all good stuff though. Very productive.
Cool.
How about you, man? What do you got going on?
Other than playing Smite with you, which you're teaching me the ways of the conquest map. I guess the biggest thing that's happened recently is that Aaron's car died, and we had to go get a new one for her. Well, actually, we spent several weeks with her just using mine since I don't go anywhere. But we had to go get her one, and we ended up settling on a pretty sporty little Honda Civic model. And, it's super, super, super comfortable, super feature rich. And it just got her and I into this discussion where we were like, why do people spend 80 grand on a Mercedes or a Lexus or what? Like, we just can't, like, we're looking at the features that are available in this Honda Civic, and we're like, what else do I want? Exactly. Like, yeah. It's just one of those things where we're pretty budget conscious people, her and I. And, so it sparked this whole conversation, but it is a fantastic little car and I'm glad she got it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was just like talking to my wife, like the other night about money I've always been of the mind of if you're really interested in something and you're going to use it a lot, then you should spend money on it. It's kind of like the minimalist mindset, right? Is that you just don't waste money. You spend money on things that you actually care about and use a lot.
Yep.
I'm okay spending money as long as you're actually going to like I don't get these people that buy these huge houses because they're great for entertaining. And then nobody's been entertaining the past year and people barely entertain in those houses. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, I get you. Yeah. Well, I guess if I could sum up Aaron's perspective or mine and Aaron's perspective is, we're not going to pay the extra money for the hood ornament of an L.
Yeah.
We're plenty fine with the H.
Yep.
So that's where we're at.
I can't comment too much on spending too much on a car though.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But at least yours had some other value to it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure your Civic doesn't have some of the features mine has.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's true. Anyways, so we're going to just give you kind of an overview here of what our topic of the day is. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be discussing today state management in an Angular application. We're going to talk about it in a practical way. So kind of like what is a practical use case for state management. So we're going to go through like an example and talk about it. It's really for everyday use in an Angular application, but we'll get into more about that later. The other thing to note is that the format for today's episode is similar to the one that we did in episode 10 for Cypress, where we're really going into this with something that I have a pretty good knowledge on for estate management. I've worked with this. I understand it really well, and I have the concepts down. And John certainly knows about it, but hasn't had as much experience with it. So it's going to be a train me kind of an episode where John's going to be taking the point as the audience listener and basically asking questions about what's going on and trying to break down some of the pieces.
Yeah, I've managed to nearly completely avoid state management in my Angular experience at this point, which I think is what most people probably are in that position as well, because you really don't need it in a lot of use cases. But you've been talking to me the past couple of weeks about some of the cool stuff you're doing, so that's why I wanted to do this episode, so that I could find an hour to pick your brain and not feel bad about it.
and make an episode at the same time. Sounds great.
There you go. Yeah. Multitasking.
All right. So our quick tips first then, and then we'll get right into the topic. So John, what is your quick tip for this episode?
Oh man, mine is amazing. So I just found out about this feature the other day, which is like crazy to me. I don't know how I didn't know about it sooner. Maybe it's new. I don't even actually know, but I've been using the Chrome tab groups. So actually I've been using the Brave browser recently, but it's Chromium, so it has the same features. So in Chrome, you can actually right click on a tab and create a new group. And then you can put other tabs in that group. And then it just creates like a block, so you can collapse or expand it. You can drag it off into another window. You know, it kind of puts everything together. And I realized, like, I was always an anti-tab person. You know, I was like, close your tabs. But what I actually hate about it is like the look of a bunch of tabs. So since I started going to Chrome tab groups, I have a lot of tabs open, but since I can collapse them all, it doesn't like affect me negatively. Like I don't like think about the need to close them.
Yeah. As long as you have a computer that's able to run all those tabs and not have it, you know, chunk down your machine. But yeah, you're definitely in that situation. So grouping them just made you feel better.
Yeah. We all have 64 gigs of RAM in our computers, right?
I don't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I went a little overboard. But yeah, so it definitely like aesthetically pleases. And then you can give colors to them too. So you can like, I'm a big color guy. I use that color extension Peacock for VS Code. So like, I like to just like identify things on colors. So it's pretty cool. I like
nice.
Yeah. How about you? What are you going to tip people with today?
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about using Discord as a professional tool. And so let me just give you a little bit of a story here of our progression. So our company utilizes Google for Google Chat, and that's for, you know, instant messaging between everyone. And we also use it for our video meetings, at least the short ones that we're not going to Zoom or something like that. We've also, in our team, sort of utilized some other features because Google Chat wasn't quite doing it for us. So we ended up using Slack for a little while. But Slack had a few drawbacks, like didn't have good history on your messages and your discussions. So it was hard to go back and look at information. And then we realized, man, it would be great if Slack was more like Discord. And then we were like, well, wait, why aren't we using Discord? And it's because that there's mental division that says Discord is for gaming.
Yeah, you mean this video game thing? We can't use that for work.
Yeah, can't do that. But then, you know, when you look at it, it's really a great program, right? Like you can have all these channels for text. You can have, plenty of voice options. Voice now has the ability to stream video at the same time or show your screen. So it really just kind of takes the place of everything. For us, and it's a very easy way to work, and the program is great. I love Discord. I think it's one of the best, you know, things out there, especially from a standpoint of being free, right?
Yeah, and one of the really cool like benefits that I noticed early on, I think I mentioned to you guys, is with Discord you can actually see when people are helping each other, right? So like you can see when people are in a chat room or in like a voice call room or whatever. So like I know, you know, that Chris is in a room with, you know, Johan, and Johan's streaming his screen. So like I know not to bother them, right? Or I know that they're working on something, or I can jump in and if I'm free and help out. So I was actually surprised by some of the collaboration it actually offers that like you don't get with you know, chat with Google or even Slack for that matter. So, yeah, it's been an awesome tool so far, really.
Yeah. So, you know, break down your the way you think about it and start realizing maybe this is an office tool. Maybe it's not a gaming tool.
It's just so funny because whenever somebody like pings the Discord CEO about a business license, he's like, yeah, that's probably a good idea. But then he just doesn't do anything about it. It's really funny. Yeah. So.
Gotcha.
All right. So yeah, I'm going to hand it over to you. I think you're going to do probably most of the talking here, and I'll jump in with any you know, questions that I see along the way to try to help increase my understanding. And I'm really excited to figure out how to manage my states.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to talk about briefly, we'll start off here with what is state management. Like, let's just break it down into what is this thing? Because I think a lot of people, if you were to say, what is state management? They'll be like, it's NGRX. And that's, you know, an answer. It's not a very good one because all it is NGRX is a library, right? And that library is a way of handling state in an Angular application. It's also a very major decision to make to use NGRX. It's a heavy investment. It changes a lot of the way you work and interact with things. It involves its own training, if you will. It's a big decision to decide to use that in an application, and you better be ready for it. You know, but that's like going all in on state management and a way of coding. But we're not going to talk about that today. We're talking about just regular old state management. What is it as a concept? So the very first thing I'm going to say, state management, John, is just data, right? It's data that is one current state. Its state is managed by components talking to it or components reading that state. And that's it. That's really all that state management is. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would. I guess I got my first question already. So when I get what you're saying, and like that is state to me in like a general programming sense. Mm-hmm. But when we talk in the Angular world, you hear a lot of these videos and guides where they're like stateful components versus non-stateful components.
Yes.
Right. And I think generally the difference is that one of them manipulates state and one of them doesn't, right? So one of them's kind of just a view or a dumb component, as they call it, and one's a smart component where it actually manipulates it. So like, is there a difference in your mind if I say a stateful component and I talk about state management? Because like, to me, those kind of blur terminology wise. So is there a difference?
Yeah, I think we're dealing with a little bit of terminology bleed there, if you will. But they actually do dovetail nicely back onto each other. So let's use that as an example of talking about state. So if I say that something is a stateful component, what that means is it is aware of a certain data set, and it may change that data set or just make use of it. And anytime that data set changes, it's probably going to be aware of it. If I say that it's a stateless component, well, then it's just going to take in information and display it in some kind of way. It may pass out an event if someone were to take action, but it's not going to take action itself on the data's state. It's just reading it and understanding it, and then that's it. So if we think about that, something has state. The stateless component doesn't, but something does. So let's get into an actual example here. Let's talk about a customer detail page, right? And this is what I would refer to as an orchestration component. It's something that has a concept of what is a customer, and it's probably using a number of either stateful or stateless components to display and allow for editing, possibly, of different pieces of this customer object. So let's say that there's a basic info component, and there is like maybe like a phones component or something like that. So it's got a list of phones. It passes into the phones component, and maybe that doesn't do any kind of editing. If it doesn't, then it's stateless. And it has the basic info it's passing in to the basic info component, such as its name and things like that. But that component actually is stateful, possibly in our example, and it can change those values. So there's an example, but. The detail page, the one that's an orchestrator of those two, it probably knows what customer is as well. right? So there's really two stateful components and one stateless in this current example. The basic info is stateful, and it can change the state. The customer detail, the one that houses these two, is stateful. And then the phones one is just being passed in a list of phones and just displays them. So it's stateless.
So you're saying in your example, you have like kind of a, you know, we'll call it a, like you're saying, you said orchestration, I'll call it container component because that might be a little bit easier to understand for people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you have this customer detail, which doesn't do anything except have other components inside of it.
Right? Yes.
It doesn't do anything else. But it probably passes into those components information about the customer, right? So we haven't gotten to how the customer is being pulled yet, but it in some way knows what the customer is, whether it's passed in or it's pulled, probably pulled. So then you have basic info, which is kind of like customer name, you know, customer status, you know, things like that. That's another component, which, you know, may handle saving. And then you have phone, which is a third component in this scenario, which is really just probably taking in customer phones and then passing out save events for the container, you know, the customer detail to handle.
Sure. I think that's a good summary. Yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm following you so far on this. I'm still a little confused about, you know, where is state and where is not state. So maybe you can keep going and I'll get it a little bit more.
Sure. No problem. So I guess here's the first question I'm going to pose to you, which leads us to our next section. Is there already state? Like, is there state management already occurring?
I would say yes.
And you would be right.
Okay. Yay. Yeah. gold star to me.
Yeah. Gold star to you. 2 points to Gryffindor. So at this point, what we're saying is state management is nothing more than data that is being stored in a particular place and that could be updated by multiple components possibly, and that if it does get updated, tells the other components that it changed. So the example here of a customer object being defined as a property on the customer detail page and then being passed via an input to the basic info and being passed as an input to the customer phones, that is passing around state because it's a reference to an object. So clearly that's the state, correct?
Yeah. So I guess I lied at the beginning when I said I avoided state management.
Well, nobody can. That's the issue. So this is certainly a version of state management. It works just fine. You know, the issue that we have here is when we get to more complicated scenarios, does this pattern still work? So what I'd like to do is I'd like to take our relatively simplistic example that I probably everyone's familiar with, and let's get to something much more complicated where maybe it's not as clear what we should be doing. Okay?
Yeah, because I think it's pretty obvious when you have like that level of component structure, you're just dealing with inputs and outputs. That's pretty straightforward. That's easy. I think most people are comfortable with that. So I'm curious, when do you think that kind of falls down or that's a problem?
Yeah, I think that generally it falls down when you have a chain of multiple inputs and outputs that are trying to talk through the component structure, if you will. So let's give an example of that type of scenario. Let's imagine that we have a page right now. And there's a list of customers on the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side is a form where I can either, you know, add a brand new customer, or if I select one from the list, it'll populate on the right-hand side. And now I'm allowed to edit that customer. So now here's what we have. We have an orchestration component that's the main one. It has the list, right? The list is responsible for saying if something gets selected. So that's an output event that then the orchestration component, the main component on the page, has to be aware of. When it hears that event, now it has to tell the detail component on the right that something just got selected. Then imagine this detail component is a lot like the one that we had on the previous example. It's got two components inside it. One is basic info and the other one's phones. So maybe you see where I'm going here. The flow is that the customer list on the left-hand side gets a click, a selection of a particular customer. It now gives an output event to the main customer page that we're working on. We'll call that the inline edit page or something like that, right? And it's the orchestrator of all this. So it gets past that output event. Now it's responsible for pushing the event up to the detail component and saying, this is the new customer. Then the detail component, who really doesn't care that that happened, is now responsible, though, for passing that to the basic info and the phones. So we have this like multi-level communication that's through inputs and outputs, of which I will call a grapevine sort of input-output communication. So what do you think about that scenario?
Yeah, I'm following you here. So the problem really isn't the initial like sibling level communication to me, right? So like you have the list and then you have the detail component. Mm-hmm. So I think like output from a list, input to a detail with, you know, the inline edit or whatever we're calling that component, handling that communication is fine. I wouldn't really have like a problem with that. Mm-hmm. But I see what you're saying now is you have a second level of input where you have to pass it further down into the basic info component and the phone component. So you have this like this multi-tiered structure. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely found myself in this scenario where you're like kind of chaining outputs up or inputs down. I always feel like personally, I probably could architect it a little bit better, which maybe you agree or not with, and maybe you can get into that afterwards. But yeah, I'm following you. I'm curious to see how you solve this problem with I'm assuming handling the chaining of inputs and outputs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because there's a lot to consider here, right? Like, if I wanted to refactor any of this, now I have to be aware of the chain. If the chain is going to be changed in some way, now if that chain is still responsible for passing things up or down. So this lateral communication, lateral is not the right word, this linear form of communication where it's like draw a line to the components that are all connected, kind of has some downsides, right? If we think about it, what components in this scenario actually care about the state? And I'm going to say the state. Let's call the state the current customer. Who cares about that in this scenario? We've outlined five components. The list, the overarching general orchestration page. That's a component. We've talked about the detail component, which then houses the basic info and the phone. So there's five components. How many of them care?
Care about the current customer?
Yeah. How many of them really want to know?
I would say all of them except the main sort of like top level edit component that holds everything.
Yeah. I mean, that would be true. But let's say that the basic info and the phones are capable of handling their own saves. So there really is, there's no event in the detail one on the right that needs to be known. So in that scenario, the one that I'm painting in my head, which of course that's the problem, it's in my head, but but the one I'm painting in my head, the list who's involved in selecting a customer or may want to know if the customer that was selected got updated, probably wants to know that. The basic info definitely needs to know.
Yep.
And the phones definitely needs to know. But the other two components, they don't really need to be aware, correct?
Yeah, so my mistake I made, and you know, this is just a little bit of ignorance, is like I still am assuming that there's some transportation mechanism of the data, mm-hmm. Which is why the detail needs to know, right? The one housing the basic info and the phone.
If we strictly say which ones have to know,
right.
It's just those three.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right, and so how many components are in between them is kind of irrelevant. It could be one, it could be two, it could be 50. That'd be a pretty severe scenario, but it just doesn't matter at this point. We just want those three to be aware of this concept of current customer. So let's paint that picture crystal clear right now. The list is responsible for selecting a new customer if someone clicks on the list. The list is also responsible for if the current customer's value were to be edited, to then display the new values on the list. Say the name changed, we want the list's name to update as well.
Yep.
So that's its responsibilities. The responsibility of the basic info is to know the current selected customer and allow for editing of the name.
Mm-hmm.
And then the phones is the same concept, but for phones. So it needs to be aware of the phones of the current customer and allow for editing of them.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I follow that.
All right. So if that's what we need, then we could obviously do this through chaining in the inputs, outputs, as has already been described. But this is a great scenario for what I would call very simplistic, practical state management, which is we just need a place that can house the current data and tell the component anytime that that data is changed in some way. So that's really state, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to make a suggestion that we already have something at, you know, at our fingertips that works really well in this scenario. And that would be a behavior subject sitting in a service. So the behavior subject, its job is to store a value and to emit a value on subscription. So if someone subscribes to it, they get the current value. And anytime that that value is updated or changed, they get a new version of it emitted out. So this would be a great way to translate state between multiple components.
Yeah, I think I'm following where you're going here, where basically we're moving the responsibility to a location that's much more easily shared across, you know, non-linear component structures, right? Where we're going up a chain and then down a chain and then up a chain and then down a chain, right?
Right.
So yeah, the service obviously can be shared across all those chain levels.
Yeah, it's just, we're just going to inject it in each of them.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, I guess the first question I have is, you know, are you creating a service to just control state? Like, is this the main goal of your service? Is this something that you would put in the cut? Like, I'm assuming there's going to be a customer service already at this point mm-hmm. to pull the data. Are you putting it in with that, or are you creating a whole new service to handle this? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I'd create an entirely new service, but that has to do with how we're going to make use of the service, which we're not quite there yet. So hold that question. The answer is we're going to make a whole new service, but the reason why is something we're not going to talk about just yet.
Okay.
Okay, so now we have this service. We've created a brand new one. We'll call it Current Customer State Service. Pretty straightforward. And it's going to have a behavior subject in it of the, you know, current customer. So that's what it's retaining. In the most simple example, that's what it would be. And then, so let's now talk about how it would be used. You would inject that into your customer list. If someone clicks on one of the customers in the list, we're going to then grab the service, get its behavior subject, do a dot next on it, and give it that value. So it emits that this is now the new value.
So are you saying that, just so I understand, you're still passing as an input the customer information that came from, say, the top level orchestrating component, right? It pulls it down like the list of customers. Mm-hmm. You're passing that as an input still, but then you also, with that like at input, you have this state service that's just at this point managing when you select a customer. It doesn't really actually like control the whole list or everything. So you're combining both methods. Is that correct?
Yeah. At this point, I'm basically saying the state service is only, its only value at this moment is to know what is the current customer. So which one is selected in the list. And that way the basic info in the phones know what to show. And the list has a way to say this one. This is the one I want to show.
Okay. So that behavior subject, maybe I'm getting granular, but just trying to make sure I get, like, what are we calling that? Is that just like currently selected customer? Is that the behavior subject we're dealing with right now? Or is that too precise and we want to deal with something a little more abstract?
No. I think that we should get very precise in this case because we have a very specific purpose, you know? So I would call the behavior subject current customer probably. Currently selected is fine too. Either one of those would work for me.
We should debate the name of this for the rest of the podcast.
I think so, definitely. I mean, we normally spend most of our time in the day doing that, don't we?
Yeah. We sure do.
Okay, so let's talk about, we've already discussed what the list is going to do. It's going to basically push a next on this behavior subject anytime that it gets a selection. The basic info is subscribed to this behavior subject. No longer has an input for customer, right? But it does have a subscription to the behavior subject, and it says anytime that this value is updated or when I'm getting its initial value, set that to the property customer. So I just basically removed the at input designation and replaced it with a subscription that sets it.
Right. And we also don't have the output anymore of selecting the customer, right? So we've
right.
removed an output from the list page as well.
That's
or the
correct.
List component. Okay.
It no longer emits that value because nothing cares below it.
Right. Okay.
Right. So now let's talk about the next piece, which is what happens in the basic info if the save happens and we edit the values. So then it's the opposite flow. Now the customer basic info is responsible for taking the new customer and saying .next on that behavior subject. The customer list is also subscribed to that. And it says, okay, I just got an update of my currently selected customer, so I should update those values in my list so they display properly.
So here's where I'm going to pick my first bone with your process here.
Yeah, go ahead.
To me, what has happened by doing this is you've now made the basic info, and I'm sure a similar process for the phone, a stateful component. Right.
Yep.
Previously, it was stateless because it just output it that it wanted to save the customer and pushed out the new save.
Right.
But now you're saying I need to call behavior subject next and push in a change to the state. So to me, you've now essentially taken all of the components and made them stateful components. The way that I see it now.
That is true. That is true. However, if we were to say, what is the stateless example, right? The stateless example, if we were to go back in time, would be that the basic info takes in a customer. It allows for editing in some sort of form. You click a save button. It emits out an event that says save. And then the orchestrator or the detail that had the basic info in its view is now responsible for making that save. So technically, we took a stateless version of the form. And we made responsibility inside of the detail for managing things. And I'm saying, let's move that in. Why not put the concerns where they actually live? I'm actually a proponent of using stateful components when they're specific. I think stateless components are really great if what you're doing is working with something generic. If I want to know how to display a list generically, it's a list of anything. That's a great stateless component. If I want to know specifically how to do a list of customer, I think that's better as a stateful component because it's got a purpose, a very specific purpose. So that's my take.
Yeah, let me push back on that a little bit and just
yeah.
get your opinion on this. So in theory, I just thought about what I said a little bit while you were talking. So previously, we would have had at the detail level a function that says save customer, right? Mm-hmm. And that would have either saved basic information or saved the phone. You could have had two functions. It doesn't really matter. So that's what was creating a stateful component at the detail level and keeping the stateless components stateless. Couldn't you just have subscriptions now at that customer detail level on this current customer behavior subject,
yeah.
looking to see if the value changes, and then you're still kind of keeping that structure?
Yeah, you could have kept that structure. You could have said that the basic info in the phones are stateless components, and the detail is the one that cares. In that scenario, you didn't have nearly as big a grapevine that you were really dealing with, though, right? You just had one level down from the customer list, one level up to the detail, but still, either example is accurate. You could do your subscriptions in your stateful components of basic info and phones, or you could do them at the detail level and then just send that update across.
Yeah, I guess the thing that's a little strange to me there is the fact that we made our behavior subject so particular of like it's the current selected customer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you dot next it. I guess it does make sense. So you dot next it, and all you're doing is updating the values inside of that behavior subject. So technically, the current selected isn't changing, but the data inside of it is changing. So you still want to push out that change.
Okay. Well, that actually brings up a point that's kind of part of our advanced parts. So let's just put a cap on where we are, and then let's start moving into some advanced conversations about this. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
So at its very, very basic core right now, we're saying that we could do a service with a behavior subject, any component that's going to update either the currently selected or its values is going to do a next. And anything that wants to know about that change is going to do a subscription. And based on those, we can have the same type of communication we would have had for inputs and outputs, but now it's all stateful and contained within the component itself, with the concept of which one's current being a shared service that's dependency injection. Are we all agreed that that's where we're at?
Yeah. Yep. All right. That sounds right.
Excellent. So now let's talk about some advanced situations. You just brought up one, so why don't we launch right into it? What if what I want to do is to know what's the difference between a newly selected or an update to the selected? Well, the behavior subject doesn't really allow me any fine-grained detail there. It just pushes new, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So I could have that kind of functionality, but to do it, I'd have to build a little bit more into this service, which makes sense, right? Because a service just having a behavior subject is kind of a lame service. So imagine instead we do have this behavior subject, but we're not going to expose it directly. It's still got the same job. It's going to maintain what is the current value. Mm-hmm. But instead of it being exposed directly, we're going to make a couple of methods, right? And one of the methods is going to be I'd like to get a observable for selection changed.
Okay.
And then we'll make another method for I'd like to get an observable for selection value updated. And then we'll have another method, which is send update.
Right.
So we're kind of like saying, okay, we've got this private behavior subject that we're not going to expose directly, and we're instead going to build from that. And this is where state management starts to get, I think, fun, number one, but also it gets very purposeful. And you can go from what we've described so far all the way up to the way that NGRX works. You could build it all on your own. But we're just going to build the pieces that we need as we need them and only use the pieces that we need when we need them. So we're trying to take a much more practical approach here. So let's talk about how would we do that. Well, if we say anytime you call the update method, then I'm going to change the behavior subject to be that new value, then I'm just saying the next is inside the service. Mm-hmm. But imagine that I want to emit the value, but differently depending on those circumstances. I could use pipes to do this, right?
Yeah.
I could basically say, or you know, there's a lot of ways this could be built, but I'm actually going to go a different way than I just even said, which is when you say that you want a next, I can grab the current value. And I can say, are we updating the same ID? In other words, is the thing you're giving me the same ID as the one that was already currently selected? Because if so, that's an update. That's not a new selection.
Right. So can I pause you? Because I want to ask a couple questions.
Yeah.
So just to go back to kind of the methods that we have here, you've now taken the behavior subject and you've made it private inside of the service.
Yes.
So you still have a behavior subject, it's just private in the service. Mm-hmm. So when I'm calling a get on that, right? So I need to get, like, I want to subscribe. I still want to subscribe to the value of that behavior subject, mm-hmm. but I'm just not accessing it directly. So I have this like get current user method. Now, is that taking the behavior subject and you said returning an observable? I know technically in RxJS, like, almost everything's an observable. So just to get precise, is that converting the behavior subject to like a, like doing like an as observable and like changing it over to a different RxJS type and returning that? Okay. Is it doing like exactly what I just said? Like
it's
as
doing observable? Exactly what you just said. Yeah.
Got lucky.
Because when you call dot as observable on a behavior subject, what it does is it says, here's an observable with none of the features built in to behavior subject, meaning you don't have a dot get value, you don't have a dot get next because, or I'm sorry, dot next, because those are features specific to a behavior subject. Instead, now I'm just dealing with a straight observable. I can subscribe to it, and that's all I can do.
Okay. All right. So I'm following you now. All right. So that handles that one. And then I wanted to ask, you were just going into like comparing things. So you might have been starting with this, but let me ask it just in case. Mm-hmm. So now I'm doing this thing where I'm saying like on the were you talking about the list example or were you talking about the basic info example?
Either would work.
Okay, so let's talk about the list example first.
Okay.
So when I check something off, I'm going to call a method. And like in my mind, I'm calling some method that says update selected customer.
Sure.
Right? Okay. And then so what that's going to do is that's just going to say, you know, hey, whatever you have as your current selected customer, change it to whatever this value is. I don't really care what the current one is. It doesn't matter to me at all when I'm in the list screen, right? So that's pretty straightforward. It just does a dot next on the private and passes in a new value.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of what you were describing, which is like, I want to know like update selected customer, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call that on the basic info save and the phone save. I call update selected customer. So what's different about that? Am I just pushing another next with a different value? Like, I guess I don't see the reason to have that logic separated.
Yeah. So let me just clarify my position. I'm actually mm-hmm. saying there's one method for pushing.
Okay.
Whether you are selecting a new one or updating the current one, I don't care. It's one method called I'd like to make a change, please.
Okay.
That's it. And it doesn't, you know, you don't select a different method in the basic info than you did in the customer list. Both are calling the same thing. New value. Whether that new value is an update or that new value is truly like a completely different customer. So that single method allows me to hook into it though, and now I can make changes, right? Like I can say, okay, I can either next the value in the behavior subject and these other observables I'm providing, one observable is know when there's an update, the other observable is know when there's a new selection, right? So I'm really changing that you're going to subscribe to two different things. The customer list only cares when there's an update to the current value. It doesn't want to know when a new one was selected because it's the one that did that. So clearly it doesn't need to know about it.
Right.
But the basic info doesn't want to know about updates either. It doesn't care. It just only wants to know when the selection has changed.
Gotcha.
So this is the scenario I'm painting right now, is that there's one up, one thing that changes, and then there's two down. You know, one that cares about when the update happens and one that cares when a new one's selected. So I just want to make sure do you have any questions about that setup right now?
No, I think I get it. I mean, I think like, you know, simplistically, we're just optimizing our subscriptions at that point, right?
Yeah.
Because technically you could have one and it's not going to break anything because it's still they're doing the same thing. But we're just, you know, saying when I don't care about the value, I'm not looking for it. I also do get your point where you're saying like in this simplistic example, it's hard to extrapolate like, you know, specific needs each one might have where you might want to pipe map something or, you know, switch map to something else or, you know, some other cases, and having a single entry point is going to prevent, you know, make that difficult, right? Because then you have to worry about your other scenarios. So this gives you a more, you know, direct approach to, you know, you're just being more explicit about what you want to do for those things. And then you can optimize the subscription and you can also leave yourself like open for modifications later. So I follow what you're saying now, and that makes sense. So I was kind of right by saying like the update is the same.
Yep, it is.
So there was no reason to split it. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's great.
So there are a couple of ways that this could be handled from this point forward. Either we could have two completely different subjects and we update, you know, the one that we like when we get this update opportunity, we make a determination, am I updating a new one or am I selecting a new one? What am I doing here? And then we call the next on the one subject that we care to do at that point. But now it's kind of weird, right? Like I've got this current customer selected as a state, but I'm really pushing it to two different places depending on what kind of change happened. That sounds weird to me. I don't know that I would go that route. But you could, right? That would work.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to suggest instead. We get the single update. It just calls next. We're not going to worry about, you know, calling a different one. So the behavior subject is singular. The update method is singular. And it just does the same thing in both cases. But then I'm going to say the observable we're giving back is where we're going to make the change. So when the observable comes back, I have the ability to pipe, right? Mm-hmm. I could say, give me the behavior subject as observable so I don't have the next and all that. And then I can pipe that value and I can make all kinds of edits to it, correct?
Yeah.
So one of the pipe options is filter. Filter says, I got an emission from the behavior subject, but I may not want to actually emit it any further than this. Like a great example of where filter gets used is null. I want to filter all values that are null. I only want to know about things that are not null. So then what happens is you can push null via next as much as you like, but the things that are listening would never hear it because they all get filtered out.
Gotcha.
So imagine this scenario. Now we're going to say, take the behavior subject as an observable, pipe filter, and the one that says, I want to know only about new selections, says only give me this if the value IDs have changed.
Right.
And the other one says only give me this if the IDs are the same. Mm. So now we have this much more purposeful state management service. It accepts the updates just like it did before. It's sort of a pass-through, but at least we're not exposing the behavior subject directly. And of course, the reason you don't want to expose it directly is because then you don't have any control of the up or down action at all. So it's not very good state management if you have no control.
Yeah, plus your pipes and stuff are invalidated. Yeah, well, not the gets, but you know, you could run into problems there.
You could certainly run into problems. So now we have two different methods for getting these observables, and they are going to only emit results when they're supposed to. And so one can care about updates to the values, and one can care about new values being selected.
Yeah, this is really cool. I feel like you've given me a hammer, and magically everything on my desk has transformed into a nail. So I guess I'm curious, you know, I don't know if you want to do any more wrap up on the concept, but my question is really more, you know, why, like, so I'm thinking about how I'm building this logic from the beginning, right? So like I'm getting this requirement and I'm trying to design it and figure out how to build it. Mm-hmm. And I end up with this list page and this detail page and these two subcomponents. Like, so I probably didn't get there. Like, I probably didn't design it all that way initially. I probably got there along the way. Or maybe I did design it that way and didn't consider this scenario with the state management. So, like, at what point to you in the process are you deciding to use the state management? Is this a decision you make up front where you're like, okay, I'm definitely going to have nested components. They're definitely going to have, you know, nonlinear data inputs and outputs, you know, so I'm going to need state management. Is it like, oh, when I get to this scenario, I stop what I'm doing and I create this state service? Like, how do you identify the need for this and then actually try to implement it? Because I think like the implementation you've designed is actually like super simple. Like, I feel like I could expand that to tons of ideas without too much trouble. But I've always struggled with like, you know, what's the trigger point for you on putting this in? Because obviously you could just make every component do this.
That's right. Really wanted to. No inputs and outputs in my whole Angular application, John.
You fixed Angular.
Yeah. I just removed inputs and outputs. I told my linter to throw errors if they're ever used.
There's not enough lint errors in our apps already.
Yeah, I this may sound like I dislike inputs and outputs. I actually like them a lot. I think they're great. But the first time that I have to pass events or data between inputs and outputs, the first time I have to do that and have it go to a component that doesn't care about it, it's just a pass-through at that point, that's the first time that I'm going to think about state management, number one. A second answer to that question, and maybe even more impactful, I will definitely think about state management if the thing that I'm working with is something that I want to ensure is only changeable through deliberate methods. Let me explain why. Normal sharing of an object from one place to another through inputs, unless you're being super careful about how you're doing this work, the normal way that's going to happen is by ref, right? So the object itself is actually only stored one place, and all of these components have access to the same exact object.
Yep.
So if I make a change in my basic info to the object directly, I'm actually changing the object back in the list. There is no separation, really.
Right.
So you got to be super careful about those scenarios. You can certainly run into problems where you're changing things without meaning to. Byref is a concept that I think everyone's familiar with, but certainly has been burnt by before as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even say I think sometimes you run into the opposite problem where, you know, because I think the problem is the object ref is stored, but the way that objects refs work in JavaScript is the properties don't count as modifying the object ref, right? Because they're, I don't know the actual difference there to say it technically, but I know that occurs. So I actually run into the problem where I want to change it everywhere and it doesn't because I'm only modifying like a property of the object.
Sure. And then there's the extension of that issue, which is, let's say that you're dealing with change detection in Angular, and let's say that you're using the strategy of on push, which is a great idea. Like on push is a great way to go because otherwise your change detection fires anytime someone breathes on it. So on push is a great idea, but what does on push mean? It means specifically that the object reference itself has changed in my at input designation. So if I were to change just a property, as you just described, that doesn't trigger on push because the object reference has not changed.
Right, just the values have changed.
You have to reassign it. You have to, like, say, completely reassign this value with an entirely new object, and that's the only way that on push would fire.
Yeah, that's usually how I get around it. Yeah,
sure, it's a way to get around it, but imagine that you had a bunch of subscriptions to some sort of subject, like what we're discussing right now for state management. Then none of that matters because on push change detection recognizes subscriptions as being something that would cause change detection to run.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This definitely, the way you described, you don't have this issue, right? Because you're dealing with subscriptions and you're being very explicit about emissions.
Now, that being said, our current example that we've discussed so far still has object ref stuff. You may not recognize this yet, but behavior subjects are still passing around an object reference. That's not the situation that we're in where we're actually breaking the reference or sharing around a copy of an object. We are sharing the actual object.
Right.
So far we've got the same ref problem in our state example, but I'm just going to give you a quick answer to that. If we already have a pipe for filtering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, throw in another pipe function where you map, and your map is simply going to do a JSON parse of a JSON stringify, which breaks all references because you're stringifying the object and then creating a new object off of that. And at that point, now our state is truly stateful. I'm giving you a copy of this object, not a link to the object itself.
Yeah, and you're controlling that at the source, so you don't have to worry about doing it everywhere. You need to think about where everywhere you want to actually implement it. So that's really cool.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways that this can help out and break those kind of problems down.
Yeah. So I have some final thoughts on this, but I want to give you opportunity. Is there any other like gotchas or advanced scenarios that we didn't cover that you want to?
Yeah, the only other thing I want to mention is you had an early question about why this should be a separate service. Maybe after everything we've discussed, you don't think that that's a much of a question anymore because we've already expanded it. So, but there's another reason why it being a separate service makes sense, and that would be what I would call state encapsulation. We can either dive into that right now, or we can go to your questions first. Your call.
Oh, I was going to say I had final thoughts.
Oh, okay, good. All right, yeah. So then I'll just briefly talk about this state encapsulation concept.
Sure.
So as of right now, we've talked about a service with a behavior subject and a bunch of methods. And as a service, if I were to say provided in root, then there's a singleton of this service in our application, and everyone who asks for it gets the same one, but it also lives in memory forever. So it just sits there, even if I'm not on the page that's using it. Because this has a very specific purpose, right? This service, this state service, is meant to talk about state for a specific component structure. So if I have other components that have nothing to do with this, that state's still alive, still sitting there.
Yeah.
Even though I don't need it anymore. So one of the things that I think really works well here is taking that service, which is now very specific in its use case and is not tied to any other logics, and we're going to provide it not in root, not even in the module. Instead, we're going to provide it in the base component that is using it. So the major component that has the list on one side and the detail on the right, that component in its provider statement, we put this service. So that means every time the service or every time the component is accessed and displayed, we'll make this service and spin it up. Every time that component is destroyed, we'll get rid of the service. And then when we come back, we'll spin it back up again if we need it. So it's not just stateful. It's literally only used when it needs to be. So it's truly stateful if you think about it.
Yeah, that's nice. I was like thinking, like, is there a clever ng on destroy? We could null out the behavior subject, which I'm sure you could do, but that's a much cleaner way of accomplishing it. I like that. Like, finally use that provider in the component. I don't think I've ever used that for anything yet.
This is the only time I've ever used it.
Yeah, that's cool.
But it's a great case because you can imagine you might even find yourself in a scenario where this state is being provided in a component and that component is shown more than once on the page. If that were the case, each one has its own service. They can't affect each other at all because they're literally encapsulated in their own view.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's it. That's all I have. That's I'm done.
Hand up. You're done. yeah, that's great. I mean, I think the way I see this is like it's a really nice tool for your tool belt, right? So I always talk a lot about like you want to have all as many tools in your tool belt as you can, so that you know when the job arises, you have the right tool to you know perform it. So this is definitely one of those things. I think like as you get more practice at it, like you for instance, could probably design ahead of time, like knowing where you're going to want to do this state management. I found that a lot of times, you know, it comes up as people run into problems, you know, where they aren't having state management problems, but they're having other problems, at which point state management would solve. So having this like kind of knowledge and maybe practicing it on one or two examples so that you kind of see the flow is going to be useful because you're going to probably encounter a scenario where you're having trouble, you know, managing this object and the different states it's in, and when it does this, you want this to happen, and when it does that, you want that to happen. But you don't want to write that code everywhere. So I think that, you know, that's kind of my takeaway on this is like, this is going to be a really useful tool for me now that I'm aware of it to kind of implement it as I go. But I don't know that I would like go into a component or go into a feature like saying, yeah, I'm definitely going to start using this. Because it does add some ceremony, right? Like inputs and outputs are just easier when they're basic scenarios, right? Because you don't have this extra service. You're not worried about this behavior subject. You're not doing all this as observable stuff. You're not subscribing as well in the components. Like the inputs and outputs are handling that change state for you. So, you know, I just want to caution people to not throw this at your whole application. But it's definitely been a very elegant solution for quite a few particular scenarios that I've seen you use it in, and everybody comes to me afterwards and is like, whoa, like that thing Chris did was like amazing. So definitely encourage people to like keep it at the top of the list of things to try out and use when the scenario comes up.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you said. I'll extend it even further though and say I think that state management as a concept, especially because of NGRX out there, I think a lot of people think of it as an all-in or an all-out. You know, I'm either using state management and that's the only way I interact with things, or you know, I don't use state management at all, so it's all inputs outputs. And I'm basically saying I think that, you know, using these kinds of tools, you can have both in the system, and it's very easy to understand what's going on, and you don't have as much work. Upfront cost as saying, all right, we're going to go use NGRX for everything now. You know, there is a middle ground here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's perfectly said. Cool. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for us today on state management. Hopefully you enjoyed this interview format that we try out every once in a while. Let us know. You can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at John Graham Dev. Chris is at Pilgrim Secret. You can let us know if you like this or if you want more podcasts in this format or less for that matter. We'd like to hear it either way. You can also, if you want to work with us, you can check out our jobs page at milestechnologies.com. We are hiring. We hire remote as well, so you can be anywhere in the country or world for that matter to apply. If you want to work on this stuff and hear from Chris firsthand before it gets rolled up to a podcast, that's a great way to do that. But yeah, as always, thank you for listening. We appreciate all the feedback and we look forward to hearing from you and giving you some more episodes soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody. See ya.